This episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast is brought to you by Arjuna Solutions. Arjuna uses its patented AI and behavioral economics technology to help nonprofits increase their direct response fundraising. It's easy with Arjuna. Learn more at www.arjunasolutions.com.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, Mickey Desai, still with you here from Cause Camp. Very happy to be talking to Nicholas Christock, who's sitting here at the table with me. Nicholas has a couple of different titles to his name. One is the founder and CEO of his own nonprofit called Fleece and Thank You. And that's Fleece, F-L-E-E-C-E, Fleece and Thank You. And then what's the name of the other one, Nicholas?
Kind Catch, K-I-N-D-K-A-T-C-H.
And that's not a nonprofit.
Correct. For-profit technology company.
Okay. So let's talk about the tech stuff first, and then we can talk about the nonprofit stuff. What does Kind Catch? What does Kind Catch do for nonprofits?
When I was building Fleece and Thank You, I wanted to find a way to engage my donor base in a hyper-personalized way. Mm-hmm. When Mickey gave us a gift, I wanted Mickey to see exactly what we did with that gift in a personal way using video. So I built myself a tool just for myself to use. And I had a bunch of other nonprofits asking if they could then use it. And that eventually created what has become Kind Catch.
Wow. Okay. So my first general question is, how do you monetize it?
Yeah. It's an audience engagement tool. So our nonprofit partners, we call our customers partners, they're on monthly or annual subscriptions to use the service. Really, really low barrier to entry. So, you know, $99 a month at our standard tier. It's like your MailChimps or Constant Contacts of the world gets you a certain amount of texts and emails on a monthly basis to share your story.
Okay. So share your story. Let's break that down into granular tasks. What kind of specific things can you help nonprofits do?
Yeah, three things in particular, Mickey. It's content collection, curation, and sharing. So we'll break that down on the collection side. Collecting authentic video content from your team who's seeing your impact or from your volunteers who are helping make it happen. Curation, all those moments in one shared place, mobile app or desktop, and then sharing. You can move those video moments directly via text, email, soon to be WhatsApp, directly to your donors so that you can really get engagement and eyeballs on those moments.
How does it work?
Mobile app and desktop tools. And so let's say you're a nonprofit that's doing some work in the States, but maybe you have some satellite operations in another country. So we've got, you know, one nonprofit in particular, they've got team members in Africa. They all have access to the mobile app. They're capturing a moment from a soccer camp in Zimbabwe, and almost in real time, it goes up to a cloud-based locker. They can share it to the funders, donors here that helped donate to make that soccer camp in Zimbabwe happen. So almost in real time, they're sharing that story via video.
Okay, so my devil's advocate question is, how is this different from using something like TikTok or Facebook Live or whatever it's called? What is the benefit of going with you guys instead of using those things?
For sure. Yeah. The benefit is going to be that targeting and segmenting, right? When you post a video on Facebook, it has to be generic because everyone's going to see it, right? But if you're taking video of campaign A, you can shoot that directly and almost in real time to the folks that donated to campaign A and only those folks. Because I think that today's donor is so desensitized to mass communications. They know if a video is meant for 10,000 people or just them. And the closer we can get to just them, the more engagement we're going to get, the more conversion we're going to get.
That makes a ton of sense. It's like a personalized video that's for a specific audience. That's not very, that makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. How did you come up with this?
So it was born out of Fleece and Thank You, right? When I wanted to connect Mickey with Fleece and Thank You is a nonprofit that serves kids in the hospital with Fleece blankets. Our blanket makers make a video with their blanket that travels to the patient in the hospital and the patient can send a message back to the blanket maker. And so wanted to just hyper personalize that interaction, show you exactly where your blanket and donation went. And then that is eventually what became Kind Catch. So other nonprofits could hyper personalize the way that donors interact with them.
How many blankets a year does Fleece and Thank You process?
Annual mission to make 30,000 blankets a year. That's one for every single pediatric inpatient in the state of Michigan. And since the pandemic, we now ship to all 50 states and we've shipped to 14 countries around the world.
Okay. So again, give me a number. How many blankets are we talking about in, say, a 12-month period?
Yeah, about 30,000.
30,000?
Yeah.
Nationally or internationally?
Correct. Yep.
That's a lot of blankets.
It is.
So you're talking about 30,000 personalized videos?
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, my jaw is hitting the ground here.
I know.
Okay, wait, All right, let's talk about the nonprofit side.
Awesome.
How are you funding it?
Yeah, so Fleece and Thank You, when I first started at Mickey, I was taking just grassroots donations, mm-hmm. and I saw that that is a really tough hill to climb for a startup grassroots nonprofit.
Yeah.
So we said, well, we've got people going to the fabric store, buying fabric from corporate America, and then giving it to us. Why don't we just wholesale the fabric ourselves and do a fee-for-service model where people provide a donation to make a blanket? So blanket kits, $25. We make them ourselves, and then people can order those right on our site. They ship anywhere around the country to get made. They come back to us, and we deliver them to the hospital.
That's just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. So it is a drop ship operation almost.
Correct. Yeah, you got it. But we do manufacture all the kits at our warehouse here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So it's totally local. How and doing the wholesale fabric thing allows you to keep your costs down?
Correct. Yeah.
What other cost saving measures have you been able to put into place?
Yeah. Since the pandemic, obviously everyone's talking about sanitation and hygiene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we needed to acquire a hospital grade washing and drying unit right when the pandemic hit. We wash and dry all our blankets to 99.999% germ free. So the next time a patient touches it, it's guaranteed not to have any germs from the outside world. And there's some additional costs that we've incurred as we raise that standard of cleanliness every single day.
I'm going to apologize for all the noise in the background. I think they're getting ready for some event that involves
alcohol. Tell you what, it's a wild time here at Cause Camp. Totally, all kinds of things happening.
We're going to throw down here in a minute.
That's,
I think,
it.
So Fleece and Thank You gave birth to Kind Catch.
Correct.
Just because you were using the technology to move the Fleece and Thank You agenda forward. And then you found out that there was a market for it.
Correct.
Does Kind Catch help fund Fleece and Thank You?
Yeah, that's the eventual goal. And that's okay. Been a dream of mine, you know, since I got involved in philanthropy over 13 years ago, was to build sustainability by building a nonprofit and building a for-profit and having one being able to fuel, you know, the for-profit being able to fuel the success of the nonprofit.
Okay. This is a great model. I got to say, this is pretty cool. What's your annual operating budget?
For Fleece and Thank You, $1 million.
$1 million.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And 65% of that is through the blanket kit side of things that we do. It's a huge part for us.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, again, I'm sort of just flabbergasted at your success. What kind of customer are you looking for with Kind Catch?
The most important thing is that someone who's, you know, ready to use video and wants to use video, whether they know a lot about it or not. It is just so important to me that nonprofits are thinking about how are we going to leverage this amazing tool of video, because it's capturing attention of everyone and it's only going to get bigger. So it's one forward thinking nonprofit that says we want to use video, we just don't know how or need some help. And then two, it's really a wide range of budget nonprofit, like from a grassroots nonprofit who's just got a team of one or two to a team of 10 or 20 that wants to harness the power of video.
Cool. Does the use of the tool require them to have extra people? Like, do they need extra personnel? What's the learning curve? Where do you think the challenges are?
The good part about Kind Catch is it does not require extra bodies. We built it to be able to scale your ability to use video at scale. And we often say that for a lot of nonprofits, video is a crazy high effort with a super low return.
Mm-hmm.
We completely flip that. We can make video a low effort with a really high return when it comes to fundraising dollars and engagement.
Hmm. Does the email that you send out have a link, or is the video embedded in that email?
Yeah, video comes via email or text. It's a thumbnail image, and then clicking play to interact with that drives them to a landing page, because you can't send actual video right inside an email or text. So
yeah.
Thumbnail image, landing page, looks really slick on the texting side, just like if someone texted you a YouTube link, populates right in the thread, etc.
Fascinating. Just absolutely amazing. How much would it cost me to become a Kind Catch user?
Yeah, so standard rate, $99 a month is what most people enter at. Again, if you need more than 2,500 texts or 7,500 emails, pricing tier just goes up from there. But built it so that the pet shelter down the street can use it all the way up to the biggest of the big nonprofit.
Do I need to sign a year-long contract?
Month to month.
Month to month.
Really, I'm a really big believer in that. I think that, especially for nonprofits, like, we need to encourage experimentation.
Yeah.
And annual contracts, though they're good, don't foster a culture of experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we have annual contracts if someone's like locked into video, but month to month, we need to do our job so that you can continue to stay with us and earn your business every month.
Yeah, just fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So, in the effort to steer this back towards a nonprofit management kind of conversation, the clients that you're meeting with Kind Catch, what would you say unifies them, right? What do they all have in common?
All of the customers, we call them partners,
mm-hmm.
at Kind Catch, all have a belief that their donors deserve the highest level of personalization that the nonprofit can provide. Hmm. And so they use KindCatch because we are a tool to achieve the means to that end of the highest level of personalization for their donors, because that is what we like. We do this for a mission and impact, but we can't do it without our donors, and we need to do everything we can to bring them back.
Right. Okay. As you meet more and more people in the nonprofit sector, what do you think the challenges that they are facing? What are the things that they need to be looking after? How do they overcome those challenges that you notice they have?
I really think a big part of the answer to that question, which is a great one, Mickey, is their data. The more you know about your audience, the more you can target messaging to them. And if you have an audience of 10,000 people, well, a mass email probably doesn't produce that much. But if you know something about 10 different segments within the 10,000, you honestly can probably 10x, you know, your return yep. when your messaging is targeted. And yep. so for us, we then fit in the next logical step of, yes, you need the email marketing and social and all those things, but directly communicating via video to those segments is so key.
Yep.
Starts with the data and then ends with that personalized engagement.
Right. Okay. Very cool. If a listener wanted to learn more about either of your organizations, Fleece and Thank You or KindCatch, how do they find you?
Yeah, fleeceandthankyou.org. Order a kit. Super easy to tie in. Like if you're listening and saying, I just want to help a kid in the hospital, fleeceandthankyou.org. Order a kit. It can ship right to your home. Make it at home with friends, family. Make your video message. We'll donate it right to a hospital. KindCatch.com if you're interested in the video side of things. We're just here to help. There's a couple of really great solutions in the space right now around video engagement. And honestly, I think that there's enough room for everyone to be in there and you know to tie in different ways. I'm just very passionate that nonprofits specifically really need to make video a key part of their strategy. If we can be there to help do that, then that's awesome. If it's someone else, that's awesome too. Rising tide lifts all ships. And as an industry, we need to be making sure video is a checkbox on every business plan at the beginning of the year.
Very good stuff, man. Nicholas, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk to me today.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Hello, this is day two at Cause Camp, and my first victim for the day is Terry Loso.
Loso,
forgive me.
In case you didn't know so.
Okay, now I can't forget it. That's good. Good mnemonic there. Terry is the Senior Director of U.S. Programs for Hope Worldwide. What is Hope Worldwide?
We are a global nonprofit. We seek to support our neighbors who are experiencing material poverty or other types of need, disaster victims. Here in the U.S. specifically, we train a network of about 10,500 volunteers across the country. And we focus our training on helping them to volunteer in their local community, support their neighbors, but in a way that is respectful and relational and really mutual.
Okay. So first question is, when you say you train your volunteers, you don't care who they volunteer for.
Correct.
So you could train me, and then I could turn around and turn my attention towards my local food bank or whomever.
Absolutely.
I choose.
Okay. Absolutely. So some of our groups choose to run programs on their own. So they partner with local organizations and might run an after-school program or a English conversation club. So that they sometimes will initiate programs on their own, but many of them also support local organizations because why reinvent the wheel? If there's a great community-based, embedded in the community organization that's doing good, we don't need to reinvent that. And especially in the volunteer context, everybody's got a job, everybody's got kids, everybody's busy. And so partnering is absolutely the best way, I think, for volunteers to have an impact in their communities.
So what does volunteer training mean? What do you, I'm a new applicant. I'm coming to you to get trained. What will I expect to learn?
Well, we focus our attention on kind of redefining volunteerism or evolving volunteerism, maybe. We specifically talk about the fact that poverty, a lot of times in the U.S., we look at poverty as being a material condition that needs to be addressed with material things. So we as volunteers, we go, we hand out sandwiches or we hand out stuff.
Right.
And, you know, we certainly aren't saying those things aren't needed at times. Absolutely. But if that's all we do, we kind of could be missing the point because some great thinkers, some great community development experts have asserted that poverty is really more about broken relationships. It's not about stuff. It's about broken relationships, broken relationship with ourselves, broken relationships with our communities and the systems and the structures that marginalize and oppress people, or sometimes just broken relationships with loved ones, those that would provide a backstop during difficult times. So we're trying to redirect our volunteers to not focus so much on material goods, but instead to focus on relationships and those relationships being mutually beneficial. So if you're my neighbor and you're experiencing homelessness, you know, just handing you something, okay, that's okay, but better, how about if I look you in the eye and maybe we'll become friends and maybe I can provide some support to you, but maybe you can also provide some support to me.
Interesting. So what does the curriculum for training look like? I mean, how is it divided up?
We've developed an interactive workshop that we either travel around and do with our volunteer groups or we do it on Zoom sometimes. And really, it's a way to try to help our volunteers understand these concepts because, you know, this idea of just handing out goods is really embedded in our psyche. And I told you I probably wouldn't throw this word out, but I'm just going to do it. You
do
know,
it.
Sort of the colonial mindset. It's influenced by, I believe, certainly racism, and many of our volunteers believe that as well. Where we feel like we need to go in and we need to fix needs. And so we talk about these concepts and try to help our participants understand kind of the error in some of our thinking and help them understand it for themselves. And then we spend the rest of the time talking about, okay, if I'm going to do a toy drive at Christmas, we all love doing holiday toys.
Mm-hmm.
We're a faith-based organization. We, you know, in our churches, we love to just donate toys.
Mm-hmm.
Makes us all feel good. But then we talk about ways that we can distribute those toys so that parents don't feel like charity cases, so that there is meaningful exchange where the parent is giving something back too. And also, sorry, I know I see you about to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we want to be really careful of the messages that we send, because if you think about the message that a kid receives when the good toys come from people outside of their family, outside of their community, year after year, and they're free, I mean, what kind of, and those community members, are those people, they're not really my community members, and they don't even look like me.
Right.
Like, what a message does that give to a kid?
Right,
so
right.
We have developed and borrowed ideas to try to do toy drives and distributions in ways that really don't send that negative message and that really honor the parents.
Okay. I have several questions, but let me take a devil's advocate position here for a second and say you're talking about folks who like to walk into a circumstance and think they know the solutions already, right? Here, let me help you. Aren't we as humans, especially Western Americans, I'm going to say, right? Western meaning the entire American 48, you know, 50 states. Aren't we sort of hardwired to be problem solvers? And I mean, in my own background's in mental health. And of course, there's that very caring exchange between two people where someone will try to solve your problems. But as a counselor, sometimes it's better to not solve the problem. Let me just hear you out. And you know, that's the start of a healing relationship. But I think to that degree, we're kind of, many of us are hardwired just to be problem solvers. So is that a defense for people in that they walk into a circumstance, a community, or an impoverished situation and immediately drop into that problem solving mode before they even listen? And I'm not trying to say that it shouldn't change. It should absolutely change. But if that's what people are doing, is that okay?
Well, it's an excellent question you ask. And we get questions like this all the time. And certainly being a problem solver is an asset and a strength. And I am a problem solver. And obviously, you're a problem solver, too. But when we approach neighbors who have been maybe marginalized by our culture and our society, or have just had a hard time, have mental health issues, and we approach them from a weakness-based place, where we come in and say, well, obviously you have weakness and I need to fix your weakness, and we focus on those weaknesses, we really believe, and many community development experts believe, that that exacerbates material poverty, that exacerbates relational poverty. And so what we try to get our volunteers to do, and this is not easy, but we try to get our volunteers, instead of coming in to fix a need, let even try to get the word need out of our language a little bit more, and instead come in and say, this is my neighbor, or this is a neighboring community. Let me take time to get to know them well enough so that I can maybe identify the innovation in this community or the strength in this individual. And can I use my blessings and my resources to support that strength? Mm-hmm. And some might say that that's what empowerment means. And it's not that we as volunteers are actually empowering people. That implies that I'm giving you power. And I don't, I got very little power myself. I'm trying, but all of us struggle with that.
Oh yeah.
But instead when we highlight the strengths of our neighbors, we can maybe open doors for them to be empowered, for them to use their strengths and their God-given abilities in a greater way. And that's what empowerment is.
I get it. I totally get it. You say you're a worldwide organization.
We are.
As far as the United States is concerned, what's the geographic spread look like? Is it pretty even across the country? Are there some states that are a little behind the others? What's that look like?
Well, with our volunteer base, we are in probably 45 of the 50 states. And gosh, it just depends on the group as far as how effective or how engaged they are with their neighbors in their local communities. But we are from Alaska to Hawaii to Florida to Maine. And I probably left someplace out. Puerto Rico, yes. So we're very spread out. And it's really exciting to see. These are all volunteer-led organizations. Like, most of them are 1,000 miles from a staff person. Mm. And the work that these volunteers do, the dedication, the heart, the compassion is amazing.
Right.
We're so proud of our volunteers. I think we have the best volunteers in the country. And if anybody ever wants to debate me on that, I am open.
I want to see that debate, actually. So I have to ask, I was going to ask about the worldwide picture, but before we get to the worldwide picture, what are the five states that aren't cooperating?
Let's see, off the top of my, I'm a little geographically disabled here, but I think probably North Dakota, South Dakota, probably some of the very upper middle of the country where we don't, we just haven't gotten in there yet.
Sure.
We partner with local church congregations to do this within churches. And I guess we don't really have much of a presence in those states, but you never know.
You never know.
One of these days.
So what's the worldwide picture look like? It's a big planet. How do you reach people worldwide?
Yeah. Well, we have one of the real assets of our organization globally is we have people on the ground in 50 countries. And those folks are there. Those are all still connected through a faith-based network, although we welcome and engage many people outside of that network as well. We are not limited to people from a faith-based perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But we have organizations in 50 different countries, which is amazing volunteers, great-hearted, dedicated people. And in some places, they're actually have funding and they're staffed programs. We have amazing programs throughout India, throughout South Africa, in Europe. Europe is mostly volunteer-led. There might be a few staff there. And throughout Africa as well, there are amazing organizations doing great work in many different areas.
Yeah.
And we love that diversity because, you know, sometimes the framework, the thinking is we all need to do the same thing. We need to be good at X. We need to be good at whatever, supporting our neighbors experiencing homelessness. But really, maybe that's not an issue in Hartford, Connecticut, where I live. Or maybe that's not an issue in Bangalore, India. Maybe there's a different issue or a different way to support the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's really a wide variety of work that's being done out there, but all really respectful, relational, honoring our neighbor's dignity and trying to work together as neighbors.
Yeah, fascinating, thoroughly fascinating. My last question for you is, you said that a lot of your people are maybe a thousand miles away from the nearest staffer. How do you reach them? I'm sort of priming the question related to technology. You said that there's a training, and I'm sure there's lots of contact and correspondence. I'm sure technology plays a huge part of the infrastructure
Absolutely.
For that. So can you describe that a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, we've deliberately hired staff across the country. So it's 1,000, not 2,000. We've been doing Zoom meetings long before COVID. Mm-hmm. We've been connecting, you know, online with online platforms, on the phone. And then our staff, as much as we are able, we travel around and visit because, there is value to just showing up in person. It's a beautiful thing. But the majority of our work is done using technology.
Right. Is the training delivered in an online fashion? I'm like, is it a webinar? Is it self-paced? Or is there a facilitator that leads a class?
Yeah.
Which one is it? Is it automated or is it not automated?
No. It's that one is personal. So mm-hmm. we do it in person as much as we can. But with 150 groups, that is very, you know, we try to show up as much as we can. But yeah, it's, heads on a screen sharings. We send out handouts or, you know, online handouts folks can fill out as they go. So we really believe that the sort of personal connection is crucial. And really, when we're able to deliver it in a personal way, we see greater impact.
Yeah.
For sure.
I totally admire that. That's really fascinating work. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you and learn more about your mission and the way you reach folks, how should they find you?
Yeah, they can email me at terry.loso, terri.loso at hopewwww.org. And note, only two W's, not three. We're not the World Wide Web. We are worldwide.
Right.
We'd love to connect with volunteers and also with potential partners. Our volunteers, our 10,500 volunteers across the country, are always looking to connect with local organizations. And sometimes that can be a little hard when you don't have a staff person on site. But we are very legit and, like I said, best volunteers in the country.
Yeah.
So we would love to hear from anyone who's interested in connecting with us.
I think that's really cool. Thank you, Terry. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
This episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast is brought to you by Arjuna Solutions. Arjuna uses its patented AI and behavioral economics technology to help nonprofits increase their direct response fundraising. It's easy with Arjuna. Learn more at www.arjunasolutions.com.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.